Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
I'd like to say something.
This is Dirt and Sprague.
Back in 82, I used to be able to throw a pigskin a quarter mile.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious.
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
God, there was one week when you wore sweatpants every day.
Oh, you know what? If they were Sean John sweatpants, it would have been fine. But because they're Costco brand, it's like the worst thing I could do.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Well, all right, welcome back into the radio show. This is the second hour of it. Dirt and Sprague here on 1080 The Fan. If you missed any of the first hour. First on The Fan.
Well done. Joe had to battle through a tough one right there.
Yeah, well, hey. You know what?
A round of applause for Joe. That's not easy to do, man.
That's not easy.
He was looking at us like, why is there static? What's going on here? Nobody knew what was happening. He battled his way through.
Now, that microphone just started cutting out for a second on Joe, but he battled through.
We got top-notch engineers here for a reason.
I enjoyed hour one. If you missed it, check it out at Les Schwab Tires Podcast, 1080thefan.com. I'm a little, I'm curious how this next conversation is going to go. There's a chance I might get more fired up than you.
Which, by the way, I just got to throw this out there. Proud moment as a co-host.
Really?
Proud moment as a co-host that you get so jacked up for this now that we can like match levels of intensity, anger, like anger intensity during this segment.
Oh, well.
He's a little flustered. We won't get mad at him for that. It's okay.
Okay. No drops going on right now, Joe. It's
no
okay.
Baseball stuff dropped.
I can't even turn my mic on right now, fellas. I don't even know what's going on.
So we should get like a weather report in the hailstorm from
Joe.
Joe
Fisher out in the rain here on
let's
the
go
waterfront.
Live to the tsunami. Joe Fisher, how's the weather out there?
Well, Brandon, high winds, and I think there's a 60-foot wave about to take me over. So.
All right, well, we'll get back to Joe Fisher, make sure he's okay. We'll check back in a little more. The tsunami over there a little later on. Thank you, Joe Fish, for hanging through it. But no, I did the baseball stuff. The MLB Hall of Fame was announced.
That it was, my friend, that it was.
The class of 2017. And it was Jeff Bagwell, it is Tim Raines,
yeah,
and it is Ivan Pudge Rodriguez.
Woo-hoo.
And I want to give Patrick Harris a lot of credit for this, because that baseball show yesterday. This might be the least exciting Hall of Fame class I've ever seen in my life. Can name one from way before I was born. But yeah, for me, this is about as least exciting as you get.
This was, well, and ironically, too, is usually baseball does not put in three guys. That just doesn't happen very often, even though it's happened, I think, three of the last 4 years. But really, you go back all the way to like 1955, very rarely do three guys get in. And that's what makes it so funny, is that you had three guys that I believe are Hall of Fame baseball players. I would vote for all of them.
You
to
think
be
these
in.
Three are Hall of Fame?
I do. I don't have as strict of regulations as some people do. I think a lot of baseball writers look at this as you have to be one of the greatest of all time to get in.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily have that same view. Jeff Bagwell was a great baseball player, had almost 50 home runs, played for the same organization for 500 home runs, excuse me. Same organization for 15 years. Yeah, it's a Hall of Fame career for me. Pudge Rodriguez is one of the best catchers of all time. Steroids or no steroids, same thing with Jeff Bagwell. He's a Hall of Famer in my book. And Tim Raines is somebody that I've supported for a handful of years, and he was kind of the legacy vote in, because this was the last chance for him to get in the Hall of Fame, and that's what finally put him over the top.
Look, I have a problem with two of the three, and then the last one, the only problem I would have, and that's with Raines. I mean, this guy had no votes for like the first few years. He literally nobody was voting for him. He was at like 20%. He was like 15%. And then the last 2 years, because it's the end of his voting cycle, suddenly he shoots the way up. Like,
that's the way it goes. Same, Bagwell is the exact same thing. Where early on, when you look at Bagwell's Hall of Fame numbers, they obviously weren't low enough to get him dropped off of the ballot. But he had a lot of steroid speculation around him. He didn't get a ton of support. And then after two or three years, then it slowly starts to build up to the point where he gets in this year.
And look, Pudge, to me, if you're going to say Hall of Fame, Pudge to me might be, for me, the most Hall of Fame.
He's one of the best defensive catchers of all time.
Reigns, I get the argument. He was an incredible base stealer and overall player. But Pudge was, I mean, him and Piazza, best hitting catchers we've ever seen. Can we just, you disagree
Johnny,
with that?
Johnny Bench.
Johnny Bench
Johnny
over there?
Johnny Bench, yeah, Johnny Bench
but
over
still,
there.
But still, he had that ability, though, right? Like, if you were naming catchers to do that, it'd be Bench, Piazza,
for sure.
Him.
For sure.
So, for me, it's maybe him, but him and Bagwell played during the steroid era. I mean, come on. Told you in 2001 or 2000, if I honestly told you, hey, Dirt, guess what? Jeff Bagwell, he's going to get in the Hall of Fame before Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens.
I'd laugh at you.
Everybody would be laughing at me.
You know, did you see what Bagwell said yesterday?
No.
He said, the best player of my generation? Not even close. Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
And he got in the Hall of Fame
before. And that's kind of my problem, is not necessarily that Jeff Bagwell is going to be in the Hall of Fame. It's just like, we're willing to overlook certain players from that era, and because we didn't like individuals, Barry Bonds isn't going to get in. Now, he did go up substantially in percentage. I think he's going to get in next year, if not the year after that. But come on, man. It's so weird to me that we can watch a guy like that play, and at the end of his career, we go, yeah, Jeff Bagwell, substantially less stats, and he's going to get in before him.
Yeah, this has been the biggest issue that I have about baseball in the steroid era from start to finish. That if you want to be a staunch traditionalist and say that nobody from the steroid era that you have an inkling used the drug should be in the Hall of Fame, I'm okay with that. That's your stance.
I just think you know great players when you see them.
I know. I understand. I disagree with the stance, but I appreciate you having the get off my lawn. I don't want anybody associated with the drug to get in. This is where I had the problem, and this is now, what, 3 years in a row now, where guys that people have raised concerns and raised questions about steroid use during their career have been allowed in the Hall of Fame. You know who else is in the Hall of Fame now? Bud Selig, the commissioner who turned a blind eye and let it happen, didn't even say steroids were illegal, didn't even test for them until his sport blew up and the ratings were back, and then all of a sudden his chickens came back to roost. He's in the Hall of Fame as well. And that's always been my biggest issue, and why I'm such a staunch Barry Bonds supporter, and same thing with Roger Clemens, is that we are blackballing a small list of players for steroid use because they were the best. We're blackballing Barry Bonds because he was the best of the steroid era. We're blackballing Roger Clemens because he was throwing a sub-2 ERA up there when he was 46 years old in an Astros uniform. Of course, steroids helped him, but just to allow other guys like Piazza, who had rumors about it, Pudge had rumors about it, Bagwell had rumors about it his entire career, Frank Thomas, some people don't think he did, but I'll listen to arguments that he did. We don't know whether or not they took steroids. None of them tested positive, and that's the problem with that era, is you're just never going to know, which is why if you're worthy, you should get in.
Well, and I'm going to do this as a soapbox moment for me. I think we all have players that we love. They were our favorite players, and you could say Hall of Fame in my book. I'm just going to say one last time for me, and Jeff Bagwell kind of brought me to this. My boy Fred McGriff, the crime dog, the instructional videos everybody always had. I kind of look at Fred McGriff and Jeff Bagwell. They're the same player to me. And Fred McGriff barely gets votes.
He barely gets votes.
He's at, like, I think he's dropped to 20%. And that's dropping from, what, 35%, 40% at best?
Hanging on by a thread.
And I ran the numbers, by the way, for people laughing at that notion. Oh, Fred McGriff versus Bagwell. It's Bagwell easily. Let me give you numbers.
I love you going on a Fred McGriff rant every year on this day.
Look, I love Fred McGriff.
I look forward to this segment every year. It's like I go on my Bonds and Clemens thing and then Spragle pipe in with Fred McGriff's stats. And I agree with you, man. He's a hell of a ball player.
Well, I admittedly have a bias because he's my favorite player of all time. But Bagwell, to me, it's not different. Look at these numbers. Bagwell, 449 home runs. McGriff, 493. RBIs, Jeff Bagwell had 1,529. Fred McGriff had 1,550. Batting average, 297 for Bagwell, 284 for the crime dog. Mm-hmm. 408 on base percentage for Bagwell, 377 for the crime dog. 540 for Bagwell slugging percentage, 509 for McGriff. They were both three-time Silver Slugger Award winners. Bagwell had one gold glove, and he did win the MVP in 94, so I can't dispute that. But McGriff's numbers were substantially better in the postseason.
Yeah. It's the same argument.
Jeff Bagwell's like a clear-cut Hall of Famer, and Fred McGriff's like not even a thought for people.
Right, and it's the same argument a lot of folks will make for Edgar Martinez, that they look at his numbers, they compare them across the board to a number of other players. that are in the Hall of Fame and they wonder why Edgar Martinez doesn't get the same love. And look, somebody texted in. I think this is a whole other segment in its own right. Somebody said they're blackballing them because they don't like them. People like Pudge and Bagwell. Nobody likes Bonds or Rogers. That should have nothing to do with it. Personalities, political opinions, beliefs have nothing to do with what you accomplish inside the lines on a baseball field.
Let's talk about that because there's another player that we haven't brought up that is probably being blackballed because of personality and belief. And also, good news for Edgar Martinez. Looks like the Hall of Fame might be coming rapidly soon. We'll talk more Hall of Fame next on The Fan.
This is Dirt and Sprague, Gun 1080, The Fan.
I do appreciate you giving me the old soapbox for my boy Fred McGriff. And by the way, one stat I didn't point out, because their numbers are so similar, and in some regard, you could probably say McGriff's are more impressive.
I'm not biased at all in that statement.
They both? Well, he has substantially more homers. He had played longer. He has more
not
RBIs.
Substantially more home runs.
He's got almost 50 more.
Well, I wouldn't know. I don't know
that's
if that's
like
substantially.
Two seasons for most players.
Yeah, not a Bagwell roided out in his prime.
No, that's one year.
That's one roided out Bagwell season.
I do want to point out one last thing, and I'll move on. They both had 8 seasons of 100-plus RBIs.
Okay, there's a
so
good number
So Bagwell
for
didn't
you.
Kill him in the RBI department in terms of, you know.
Look, he's the crime dog, man.
I know.
Somebody did ask you to drop the crime dog argument.
Really?
Yeah. Somebody said it's called the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Nice Guys or people we like. There's not one drug out there that helps you put a bat on a ball traveling 97 miles per hour with the bottom falling out of it. Come on, purists, get over yourselves. Put them in. P.S. Drop the crime dog argument.
I don't know how Bagwell, like, yeah, this is me. This is a me thing. I just don't get how Bagwell for people is like substantially better than Fred McGriff.
I love how passionate you get.
I know,
this.
And I admittedly am a little biased. Numbers make no sense to me.
You know what, Sprager? I'm just gonna let the listening audience in on this. You know what you said to me a couple days. Well, you obviously know because you said it to me, but you said the other day, you can't wait for baseball season.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah,
that made me a really proud co-host.
Well, when you're stuck in a foot of snow, you start thinking of spring,
right,
and sunshine,
sun,
and golf, and
barbecue,
baseball.
90-degree days.
God, my barbecue's just been sitting out there freezing his ass off.
Yeah, drinking a beer on the patio. Hope springs eternal, my
yard
friend.
Yard work. I can't wait for all of it, man. But let's continue talking about this Hall of Fame as Tim Raines, Bagwell, and Pudge get in. Pudge had a cool video when he found out. I think it was his agent or brother came over and gave him a hug. He looked really happy and ecstatic, as I'm sure the other guys were as well. But some good news for old Edgar Martinez. He went up pretty high in the percentage points. 58%, you need 75 to get in. Hoffman missed it by 1%. Damn, that sucks.
Yeah.
But Edgar went up pretty well to the point where a lot of people believe he'll get in the next 2 to 3 years, potentially.
Yeah, which is it's a great sign. I've always felt Edgar Martinez should be in the Hall of Fame. I don't understand. David Ortiz is going to get in. He'll probably be a first ballot guy. And I don't understand why all of a sudden the stereotype against DHs will go away with David Ortiz.
Championship rings. I know. That's stupid to me, too.
You can't just simply count championship rings. It's a part of it, sure, if you want to count it. But Edgar Martinez also had some big moments in the playoffs. He just wasn't with an organization at the right time like the Boston Red Sox. Both of them were clutch hitters. And so, yes, he deserves to be in, and I think it's a great sign. And for those out there that agree with me that both guys like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens belong in, that was another positive sign. I would be shocked if it happens next season. They're both at the high 50 mark, which or mid to high 50s, I should say, in terms of percentage. So they both went up about 10, but they still got about another 20% to go. It's a step in the right direction for them, and I think it's also a sign that starting next year, I believe, these ballots will be made public, and you can go look at who people are voting for. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, these votes have been done behind closed doors. Some people made them public, some didn't. Some got ticked off that media members made their votes public. But that is, that's going to start next year. And I think it's great because you can't hold a grudge or you can't simply vote for some random guy. Like, I looked at some of the votes people got, like Jorge Posada, for example. Come on, man.
That's not a Hall of Fame
player. Like, who's voting for Jorge Posada to be in the Hall of Fame when you have some of these other names that are on the ballot?
He's fallen off the ballot, by the way.
He did. He didn't get enough of the vote. No. But it was the same thing last year as the Griffey vote. Somebody didn't vote for Griffey. He's like, yeah, I knew he was going to be in, so I didn't vote for him.
Well, the votes will be public next year.
Yeah, so starting next year, they'll be public, which I like.
Well, Vladimir's going to get in. I think he's a Hall of Fame player.
Guerrero is one of the funnest players to ever watch play baseball. I think everybody can agree with that. And Trevor Hoffman belongs in the Hall of Fame. And he was 1% short. So that's a tough run for him, but he'll get in next year.
Yeah, the other ones, too. We mentioned Clemens. We mentioned Bonds. Curt Schilling's another name. And he's lumped in kind of in not the steroid allegations, but the steroid era and when he played. And borderline Hall of Famer for some people with the numbers. But now there's this kind of feel that maybe he's dropping in percentages because he dropped this year.
He for sure did.
Based on his personality, his tweets, his political beliefs, his egregious comments that he's made time and time again. He said some bad things. And a lot of people are wondering, is he dropping because of that? And just by a clear-cut definition and rules, that is not supposed to take into account.
No.
You're supposed to judge these guys and vote on them based on their on-field performances.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that Curt Schilling dropped in voting because of the stuff he said and done off the field, which I tend to think he's a bigot. I tend to think he's bat-ass crazy.
No doubt.
When it comes to a lot of things. And that was even proven yesterday that on Hall of Fame announcement day, he was roped into a Twitter beef with fake Sidney Ponson. Yeah, that happened yesterday. He was going back and forth with a fake Twitter account. And he's just a weird dude. But that should have no bearing on his career as a pitcher. Now, if you want to debate what he did on the mound, I think people can often forget how difficult it is for some pitchers to get in. For example, the only pitchers to get into the Hall of Fame since 2008, get this list. These are the pitchers to go in since 2008. So basically the last 10 years. Randy Johnson, Pedro Martinez, John Smoltz, Tom Glavin, Greg Maddux, and Burt Blyleven. That's it. Those are the only pitchers to go in the last 9 years. And they all have better numbers than Curt Schilling. He was a great postseason pitcher. We remember him in a Diamondbacks uniform. Remember him with the bloody sock. Like, he has those kind of moments. So if you want to debate the merits of him on the mound, that's one of the things I'll listen to. But if you're holding his cuckoo opinions against him in terms of voting, that's misguided.
Do you think it should, though?
No, you cannot hold that stuff against somebody.
Let me give you
isn't O.J. Simpson. He didn't murder people.
Okay, but let me give you something else. Let me give you an example that the NFL is dealing with. Now, Peter King went through this firestorm about a year or two ago. I think it was a year and a half ago. Darren Sharper, damn good football player, had a hell of a career.
Did he rape like 20 women?
Well, but hold on. His playing career, some people consider him a borderline, if not Hall of Fame player, and he came out and basically said, I have to vote based on their on the field production.
No, that's different.
And got completely destroyed.
That's different.
No. That's different.
When you go, opinions are different than actions. If he was out there, like, you know, I don't know, being a racist and killing.
Well, like Ty Cobb murdered somebody.
Different time and era. I get your point.
So shouldn't we modify it?
I get your
point. Kick him out? Hey, look, dude, that guy murdered somebody when he played.
I get your point. That happened in like 1940, all right?
He's also incredibly racist.
We've came a bit of a ways as a society. There are a lot of folks who didn't want black people playing baseball that are in the Hall of Fame as well. Actions are different from words. There's no doubt. I hate Curt Schilling. I can't stand the guy.
Yeah.
But you cannot hold his opinions against him when it comes to Hall of Fame voting.
I just find it really interesting where you draw the line and how they draw the line. I'm kind of one of those people that I like the way it's set up now. What was your on-the-field production? They're going to put on your plaque, you know, Curt Schilling, blah, 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 did this and that, achieved this, achieved that. And a lot of people are going to tell their kids, this guy was incredibly insane,
yeah,
but he was a damn good baseball player.
He's a good pitcher, man. I think he had 213 career wins. It's a hell of a career.
But you're also asking people, and this is what I find ironic, is for all the people that question the media voters, you're also asking people to take the human element out, and it's tough to do that. It just is.
It is.
Because
it's tough to take the bias out of it, for
yes,
sure.
Yes, because even though you're saying he's bat-ass crazy, but a hell of a ball player, and that's how he should be viewed as a ball player, you still find what he has said so offensive, it's hard to get that out of your head.
Look, don't get me wrong. What he said is egregious, it's ridiculous, and I disagree completely with everything he said, but somebody texted in, there's no difference. There's a difference between having an opinion, no matter how outlandish that opinion may be, and I have said before, I think Curt Schilling's a bigot. There's a difference between that and raping. How many women did Darren Sharper rape? He's in prison for how long?
I don't know how many it ended up being.
How long is he going to be in prison for?
I think it's like 25 years or something.
And you want to tell me there's no difference between the two? I'm not condoning anything Curt Schilling has said or done. The guy's not in prison for 25 years. If he was, then I would agree completely. You can take into account the things he's done off the field.
I think the point that people would make if anybody was saying that there's no difference, I think their point would basically be, if we're judging these guys solely based on their merit as a player, can you really pick and choose when you choose to look off the field? Is that okay? I think that's kind of the point. If people were to go against what you're saying, that's what their point would be.
If you want to vote for a Darren Sharper, go for it. You'll face the backlash for
No, but I'd be honest with you. There's an element of me, and look, I'm never going to have a vote because I'm not a writer. Like, every writer gets a freaking vote. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
I'll never have a vote, but straight up, it'd be hard for me with some people. If you were incredibly crazy and saying just outlandish, offensive, it's hard for me to separate that sometimes.
Well, look, Curt Schilling's not a first ballot Hall of Famer for me in the first place. He's a guy that I think has to be on the ballot for 6-7 years because, as I mentioned, all those names that have got in over the last 8 years, they're all better pitchers than him. They all have better numbers than him. And I don't think he's in that same conversation as a Randy Johnson, a Smoltz, a Glavin, a Maddox. I mean, go back and look what those guys' careers were. Pedro Martinez dominated for how many years? So those guys, I mean, they were at the peak of their respective positions for long times. Curt Schilling, great pitcher. Not quite in that same conversation.
By the way, somebody texts in, forgive me for not knowing, what did Schilling say? Well, it's almost like, what hasn't he said at this point? And if you don't follow him on Twitter, then okay. But he's been on political talk shows. He was on Fox a while ago. He was on Fox, and I can't remember what the exact topic was, but it was about young children, and basically something had happened to the point where Curt Schilling responded to the host, you mean to tell me that you've never had one of your kids' friends come over and you look at them and go, man, they're going to be really hot when they're older?
Yeah, he had one of those.
And the host on Fox was basically like, what?
Yeah.
And she was like, no, that's never been there. And he was like, are you kidding me? No, you've never been there? Like, everybody's been there before.
That's just
a sample.
That's just the tip of the iceberg of what he said. The other thing we have to look forward to as well, you know who gets in next year?
My boy.
Your boy, Chipper Jones.
Chipper. And then next is Andrew Jones, Andre Scalarraga, Javi Lopez.
Okay.
And then we've got the whole Braves class in there. Maybe David Justice.
Easy with the big cat, man. I liked the big cat.
I loved the big cat.
I don't know if the big cat, Andre Scalarraga, is quite a first
What about
ballot.
Andrew Jones?
Not a first ballot. Hell no, he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Is he a Hall of Famer, though? He had a terrible batting average.
Probably not in my mind.
He wasn't very good hitter.
Hell of a defender.
Could hit home runs.
Yes, he could.
But damn, he swung and missed a lot.
Yeah.
We've got a lot to get to the rest of the half hour of this show. Good stuff on the MLB Hall of Fame. It does get me fired up. It really is the only Hall of Fame that matters.
It is, and it's the worst voting system, too. That's what makes it so frustrating.
It's backwards, but it's the one we care the most about.
It's so archaic, but man, we get fired up every year.
I heard Primetime talking about this yesterday, and I just laughed because it's so true. It's like, who doesn't get in the Basketball Hall of Fame?
Yeah, it's not even the NBA Hall of Fame. Like, you could be a high school basketball coach and win 100 games, you get into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, they have people I've never heard of get into the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Bunch of socialists out there. Make you accomplish something, huh?
Like Bob Smith, and then next up, Allen Iverson. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Hey, by the way, are we doing this?
I think we're doing it. Hey, college basketball analyst for ESPN, Seth Greenberg, will join the show next to give his thoughts on the Ducks and the disappointing season with Romar in Seattle, and what the hell is going on in Corvallis. We'll talk to Seth Greenberg next, but first, us with a sports update.
This is Dirt and Sprague, Gun 1080, The Fan.
All right, welcome back in, Dirt and Sprague. Hope your Thursdays are going well. You can follow us on Twitter, at Dirt and Sprague. Coming up here in 15 minutes from now, we'll talk a little NFL action. But really excited for our next guest, Seth Greenberg, one of our favorite guys to chat hoops with, at Seth on Hoops. He's an ESPN College Hoops analyst. He joins us on the Gil Mortgage mobile hotline. Seth, thanks as always for the time. We always appreciate it. Let's get right into the Oregon Ducks. They've had an interesting season so far this year, a couple of early losses, but absolutely rolling since then. What's kind of the biggest difference you've seen from them from early on when they stumbled to now when they've been on this long winning streak?
Well, it's always, you know, getting Dylan Brooks back is a pretty good thing. He's pretty good if you guys haven't figured that out now. I mean, and it took him a little bit of time to settle in. But, you know, look, he makes a huge difference for this team. I think the other thing is Dylan Ennis getting to understand how Coach Altman wanted to play. The ball was getting stuck a little bit in his hands early in the season, not getting stuck the same way, developing a deeper bench. I mean, you know, you go from playing seven guys to playing eight and nine guys, and it takes time to develop that chemistry. You know, how do you play Pritchard? How do you play Benson? Do you play them together? You know, just kind of figuring your team out. You know, just because they returned a core group, it's still they have a different team and a different chemistry and a different it takes time to develop that trust. But Dana's like a mad scientist. He's so good at it, and they are awfully good right now.
How do they stack up, in your opinion, with last year's one seed in the NCAA tournament?
You know, I think that they're right there. I think they missed Cook a little bit. They missed that, you know, that position per se. Look, they got a little bit better depth. They got a little more versatility in the backcourt. They're a year older. Boucher's got to stay healthy. And then they can't get at all. And I think their early season struggles was good because then they can't get complacent. So now he can coach them, you know, right up to the bitter end in a lot of ways. So I think they're similar. Every team is different because it's your team in relation to the field. The field is a little bit better this year, but I think they're awfully good.
Yeah, we're talking with Seth Greenberg, ESPN College Hoops analyst. You can follow him on Twitter at Seth on Hoops. And when you take a look at the Pac-12 standings at this point, I mean, pretty clear top three: Arizona and Oregon, both 5-0 in conference, 16-2 overall. Then UCLA, their only loss on the year was that wild finish in Eugene, where they lost on the game winner from Dylan Brooks, that you were talking about. What do you make kind of the top of the Pac-12 this season? Arizona, UCLA, and how they compare with Oregon?
Well, look, UCLA is just so good offensively. I mean, they got six starters, not five starters. That's how good they are. They do have depth up front. Ball's made the game easier. We know that. And, they're not a great defensive team, but they're capable. Arizona's the one that's been surprising. We saw them in the Armed Forces Classic, and I had concerns. But, man, they're playing well right now. Larry Markkanen has been really special. I've really been impressed with Raleigh Alkins' improvement. And if they get Trier back, now you've got one more scorer, which is kind of what they could use to take some pressure off of them. And the way they're defending, they've been really good. And I guess Trier's been practicing, so his transition back with their team will be pretty seamless. So you got those three, and then USC is still playing well and scoring it pretty good, and which is good. And the league has legitimate depth. I think Cal with Rab and with Bird, and they're a good basketball team. The league has good depth, but those three have definitely separated themselves.
Who are the top two coaches in this conference?
Oh man, it's a very well coached conference. I mean, Dana's going to have to. Dana's definitely in. I'd say Dana and Sean right now. Sean Miller. I mean, I think Sean's done a terrific job, and I love the way he's created the culture. And Dana's fantastic. I think Alford will be in that conversation. Because in a manner in which they've rebuilt the thing. But Dana and Sean, I think, have really done just incredible jobs with their teams.
Well, and I think people just north of us in the state of Washington, there's been some rumblings about Lorenzo Romar. No doubt the guy can recruit. He's got amazing talent. And even next year's class, he's got the number one player in high school hoops coming to Seattle to play for him. Obviously, he might have the number one pick in Markelle Fultz playing for him, but they're 2-4 in conference, 9-9 overall. What do you do if you're Washington? You're sitting here, you haven't been to a tournament in a while now, but he's still bringing in talent like that.
Yeah, I think it all depends on, you sit down and you sit with your coach every time and you say, all right, what do we need to do to get better? These are our expectations. If they've had that conversation and the goals and the expectations are clear when that conversation happened, you have to go from there. I mean, Lorenzo's a proud guy. He's not if he doesn't think he can get it done, he'll probably take the decision out of their hands. But he has recruited well. They have not been able to stay old. They've been very young. They play young. And momentum, when you lose it, is hard to gain. But they haven't lost momentum in recruiting. So it's, you can flip it pretty easily. Look what happened with UCLA a year ago.
True.
So. I don't know the relationship with his athletic director. I don't know the length of his contract. I don't know the buyout that he has. I would probably have conversations. All right, why aren't we where we were? Or what do you think we're missing? Well, we're close, but why can't we break through? And what's the difference between those years you were going to the NCAA tournament every year? And Michael Porter, that dude is really, really good now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'll tell you one thing. And if he left, don't be shocked now. If Porter wouldn't leave with him,
right,
and they would just reboot at another institution.
Yeah.
Because when you got the best player in the country, all right, and you know that he's going to be with you wherever you go, you're going to be pretty appealing.
That's true. We just got a chance to watch him a couple weeks back at the Les Schwab Invitational. Hell of a player. Seth Greenberg on the line. We love talking with him. College Hoops at Seth on Hoops on Twitter. I'm curious to ask you this because we've debated it a few times on our show because Bill Walton has called a couple Oregon games recently. The UCLA game sticks out. I'm just curious, like when somebody like you, who know, I mean, you obviously know everything there is to know about college basketball. You turn on the TV and Bill Walton's the color commentator. What runs through your mind?
That's the most amazing play I've ever seen in my whole life. I don't understand why he didn't timeouts. Why are we calling timeouts? Why don't we just let these guys play? This is the Conference of Champions. I mean, he's amazing. The guy's incredible. I'll tell you one thing. Forget about basketball because I'm, you know, he knows more about nothing than any person I've ever been around.
That's a great line.
I mean, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
But look, you know, he's incredible. I mean, but. You know, it would be the hardest thing about Walton, and then I got to run because I got to do all these interviews. Yeah. The hardest thing about Walton is he doesn't talk to his broadcast partner, number one, until the game starts.
Yeah.
No conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, he'll walk in and you'll be in your shoot around, supposedly, or, you know, before the game, he'll just walk in and, you know, talking to your players.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost dangerous.
Yeah.
Who knows what he's saying to your team?
He's just filling their minds with stuff, isn't he?
But he's great, and, you know. Once a week is good for me. Twice a week, I might struggle.
All right, get you out of here on this because we know you're against it. Real quick, Oregon State struggling a lot. They might go winless in conference play. They don't have Trace Tinkle, obviously, but they were just in the tournament a year ago. I think your resume is pretty good because you went from the tournament and then you'd have seasons where you didn't go. What's the most difficult thing rebounding from a tournament team to the next?
Well, it's replacing Gary Payton. I mean, and staying healthy. Like, you know, I was really fortunate. I had about a 7-year run at Virginia Tech that, you know, we were in the, you know, we had a 5-year run. We were the third winningest program in the ACC. We had a 6-year run where we only went to one tournament and we were the fourth winningest program in the league. So, you know, staying consistent is hard. We're losing an impact player like Payton that impacted the game so many different ways is hard. And when you lose him and then you lose your next best player, that's a lot to replace. So, again, they turned it a little quicker than people thought, mm-hmm. and now they got to have a little bit of patience because they're basically playing with a young team that doesn't have that dynamic impact guy that, you know, helped them win all those close games.
Yeah, yeah. Seth Greenberg, always enjoy the conversation. That's Seth on Hoops on Twitter, ESPN College Hoops analyst. Thanks, as always. We know you're against it. We appreciate the time out here in Portland,
thanks,
Oregon.
Guys, I appreciate you having me. Thank you very much.
That was one hell of a Bill Walton impersonation. That was solid right there. I also said he's the smartest guy about nothing.
Yeah.
He's brilliant about nothing.
What doesn't he know?
Right. He just those like random things. You ever seen a volcano?
I was reading a Fun Facts website the other day, and I thought, I bet you Bill Walton knows all of these fun facts.
He probably does. That's probably how he buffs up on his knowledge. He just reads fun facts on Twitter. I do want to continue the conversation though, where we ended off, and that's with Oregon State. I don't know if people are paying attention, but they're really bad this year.
Oh, they're god awful.
Like, I don't even know if really bad sums it up. Last year, tournament for the first time since 91. This year, maybe the worst team in the conference. Where's the frustration at for Beaver fans? Crunch time is next on 1080 The Fan.
The pressure's on.
You ask what's the difference in the past, and this is just executing at crunch time.
Who's feeling the heat?
When you win, it's the greatest feeling in the world, and when you lose, it's the lowest feeling in the world.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Always $9.95 per month. So why would you ever pay more for a gym membership?
Hey, crunch time. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Always $9.95 a month. So why would you ever pay more for a gym membership? Tell you what, man, I ran my mouth yesterday about how many push-ups I could do on the air.
Yeah.
My trainer heard it, and he kicked my ass.
What did you say? You could do at least 50,
I
right?
I said I could do 50 push-ups.
How many did you do?
All in total, I ended up doing 100, but that was just a small part of the workout I had to go through yesterday.
Honestly, how hard was 100?
Well, it was broken up. So, like, it was like one of those circuit things. So, it was 25 push-ups at a time.
Did you struggle with 25?
No, I actually did it all completely fine. I was shocked. So, I still stand by my claim I could do 50, but I'm not running my mouth anymore about my exercise capabilities.
At least you didn't go to the hospital.
I did not. No, if you want to see a picture of my workout, I tweeted it out yesterday. Crunch time today, we're going to focus on the Oregon State basketball team. For those of you who have not been following them this year, not very good.
Well, you haven't missed much.
You've missed four wins. Those four wins have come against Prairie View A&M, mm-hmm. University of Texas San Antonio, mm-hmm. Southern Oregon, and Kent State.
They counted the Southern Oregon game?
They did, yeah.
All right.
They counted. 84-59 was the final. Those are the four wins. They're 4-14. They're 0-5 in conference. Colorado's worse just because they're 0-6. So not technically in last place in the conference. And I'm just curious where Oregon State fans are at, because last year was such a fun run to watch in terms of a program that hadn't been to the tournament since 1991. You know, you and I were getting ready to do our show that day, and I remember how many Beaver fans were at the bar watching with us, and because the game was on kind of right before the show started. It was a lot of fun to kind of see Beaver fans get to experience what an NCAA tournament run was like again. And then to go from that to this, where, you know, a down year, sure, hey, you're 500, you don't make it. Maybe it's an NIT or a CBI year. I don't think anybody's going to get frustrated. But they have basically fallen off a cliff in terms of success. A lot of reasons why, but just curious where the mentality of Oregon State's fan base is
right
now.
Well, basically, so I tweeted something to the effect, because they were down by, I think it was 21-2 against Oregon. They basically lost that game by 40, which is the most they've lost a Civil War since, I believe, 1982, if I'm not mistaken on that.
Yeah, they got behind 21-0.
They lost by 42 to their main rival.
That was the biggest loss of all time by them. I think that they have actually beaten the Ducks by more than that.
Well,
in like 1940 something.
That's something that hadn't happened since the 80s. Yeah. So it's just a reference of how bad that was. And I just sent something to the effect of how people feel. I didn't mean it against Tinkle. I didn't mean it hating Tinkle. I was just curious how people really, this registers for them. Because football's still in a slump, still trying to get back to being a bowl team. Basketball and baseball is kind of, for diehard Beaver fan, what they have. And basketball going from the tournament to this, look, I get Trace Tinkle. Stevie Thompson was out for a while, and it's kind of been makeshift. But Stevie Thompson's now been back a little bit. He's been playing with Drew Eubanks. Those are 2 4-star kids. Trace Tinkle's huge to them. Is he a huge difference maker in terms of winning substantially more games? I don't know. Maybe he is, and I'm overlooking it. It's point blank this. Without Gary Payton II, they never make the tournament. They don't sniff the tournament. And to be honest with you, if they never got Gary Payton II, I'm wondering how people feel about Wayne Tinkle in year 3. Now, I love Wayne Tinkle. I am in no way calling for anybody's gig. There's no way I'd want to lose Wayne Tinkle. But they don't overachieve in year 1 without Gary Payton II. And I guarantee they don't go to the tournament without Gary Payton II in year 2. Which leads you now to year 3. And if you took away the coach's sons as your biggest recruits, you're left with Drew Eubanks and
Bueller.
So, again, I'm not saying that it's not going to get better. My whole point is this. I loved going to the tournament. It was awesome.
Yeah.
To be this bad, I mean, I have found it a little interesting that they could potentially go winless in conference. That's Jay John stuff.
Yeah,
even if you're losing a Trace Tinkle, you still have 4-star kids on that roster. Did Jay John have 4-star kids on his roster when he went winless? Because even if he did, people weren't giving him a pass. So going to the tournament, I think, has bought a lot of leeway for Beaver fan, for the most part, in being patient and not overreacting. But holy crap, Dirt, there's almost no reason they should be this awful.
Yeah, this is bad. Curious the thoughts, 55305 is where you could chime in. Already got some coming in. One of our people on patience, go easy, not frustrated. Lost Payton, lost Tinkle, be patient. Another one. I'm a Beaver fan. I feel the same about the Beavers as I do the Blazers. Disappointed in the season, but honestly feel like both teams peaked 1 year early, getting everyone's hopes up. Now we're being humbled.
That's an interesting thought, too.
The teams we thought would be at this point, you'd have to ask me that last year. Enjoyed the season for both teams, but didn't expect much sustained success. Also knew be never good enough to make a Final Four and NBA championship. So it just is what it is. Another one. Greenberg hit it spot on about Oregon State losing their impact player in Gary Payton. And now we're young. My frustration is the offense. Strictly get the ball and create a shot when it should be working hard with and without the ball, looking for an open shot. I think the expectations is a good point in terms of the frustration. I think that the connection to the Blazers is great. Maybe last year Oregon State did peak a little too early. Maybe they had a couple of games that bounced their way. They got into the tournament, and it changed your expectations maybe sooner than you would have hoped. And the Blazers are the prime example of that. If teams ahead of them don't get hurt, and they're a 7 seed or a 6 seed in the playoffs last year, and they get bounced in the first round, are we... We would still be frustrated by the season they're having, no doubt, but we wouldn't have come into the year talking Western Conference Finals. Like, our expectations were based off what they did last year.
Also based on their own comments.
Also, and the difference also is that Oregon State lost their best player. The Blazers didn't lose their best player from last year to this year.
Well, and I think that's another thing that some people overlooked. And look, these are still really talented players that they have. Eubanks has been a monster this year, had a good season. Stevie Thompson can light it up on offense, and some nights it feels like he's not making much of a difference. His little brother is going to be coming, who's a McDonald's All-American, and of course, Trace Tinkle. there's still real good talent on it. I think we all overlooked how good Gary Payton II was.
A hell of a player.
And we all admired him even when he was in Corvallis.
Both sides of the floor.
Go look at him now. Like, he's too good for the D-League. He's, like, stuck in this purgatory of... He's dropping routinely, like, 30 and 40-point games and dunking on cats in the D-League, but he can't quite catch a break in the NBA.
He's stuck in that no-man's land.
He absolutely is, because he's an undersized two-guard. I think we overlooked that. And then I also just think it's a case of... You know, I was texting with somebody who works in college basketball in a different conference about this, and basically what they said was, Wayne Tinkle is a hell of a coach. There should be no pressure on him, but it really boils down to, aside from the other Thompson kid, are you really that impressed with the recruiting class? And if you are, great, but did he really capitalize on going to the tournament? Because that's what's going to hinder him and his future successes in Corvallis. It's all going to be about recruiting, and you can recruit and get guys to go there, but you got to be persistent and capitalize when you have a season like that and you get to the tourney.
Yep, they're at home against Stanford tonight and Cal.
And they're not going to beat Stanford.
On Saturday. So, yeah, still winless in conference. Oregon State 4-14 on the year, 0-5 in conference. They're right down there at the bottom of the Pac-12 and fresh off the heels of a really bad loss to Oregon. 85-43 was the final. Before that, they got blown out in Seattle, 87-61. So things not going good so far for Wayne Tinkle, but roster's banged up. Maybe it turns around next year.
More disappointing season, the Blazers or the Beavers?
Blazers.
Blazers?
I had more expectations of the Blazers than the Beavers. I didn't think the Beavers
would potentially be winless in conference? Because we're looking at that.
I didn't think they would be Jay John bad, but more disappointment in the Blazers. The Beavers lost their best player, and that's a tough thing to replace.
Yeah.
Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Always $9.95 a month, so why would you ever pay more for a gym membership? We do have lots to get to in the final hour of the show. We're going to make our predictions for the NFC and AFC title games. We'll do that to start the final hour. Also, don't look now, but quite the staff being built down in Berkeley. We haven't discussed that yet. And then at the bottom of the hour, the Las Vegas Raiders. Get used to it, folks, because it could be happening. Load a final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.